the voice of freedom. You're listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. I'm William Cooper, and this is the Hour of the Time. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take you back about 1 month to the 19th of August in Norman, Oklahoma, at the Ramada Inn Hotel. And you're going to hear 2 hours tonight of the very beginning of our conference. It was my day to speak. And so this 2 hours will consist of my lectures, and I would advise you all to pay very close attention. This is material that you don't often get to hear.
It is so difficult to have studied and researched for so many years and have assembled the only copy of the puzzle that exists that is able to make everything fit together reasonably well and to have been proven so accurate, and then try to impart the basis, the foundation of knowledge for being able to do that to people who have never even known that there is a puzzle that needs to be put together. And there's not just one, by the way, there's two that we're always in the process of assembling. One is the truth that we have to know to be able to live our lives, and the other is the deception that we have to be able to know to be able to combat that deception. So there's two puzzles that we're always assembling. And in the middle is a box with a big question mark on it. Anything that doesn't fit into one of these two puzzles fits in that box. And some of those things in the box will never fit in either one of these puzzles because they just come out of the invention of somebody's mind, or it's just some aberrant piece of information that really has no bearing. Eventually, a lot of the things in that box will fit in one or the other of the puzzles, but we have to have a couple of more pieces before that piece fits, just like a real jigsaw puzzle. And then some of them belong in one of the other puzzles, but we'll never find out where they fit for some reason or other. I want to impress upon all of you that I'm going to learn just as much during this conference as any of you are, from some of the speakers and from many of you in private conversations and in other things. And as I said before, you never stop learning. When you think that you have all the answers and that you have all the information that you need to know and that you're set, that's when you have put yourself in a cul-de-sac of delusion, and you are now out of the action. Whenever you do that, you're out of the action. You're no longer a player. You will be subject to your own limitations that you have placed upon yourself. Don't ever put limitations upon yourself. Don't ever think that you know it all. Please get rid of all preconceived prejudices, beliefs, notions. If you find that you just can't part with them, at least put them aside so that you're able to explore other avenues of information and knowledge. And eventually you'll find yourself dropping these things, by the way. What I've discovered in my life is literally, virtually everything that I was ever taught while I was growing up as a young man was not true at all. And I didn't even have an inkling of this until by some misfortune or fortune, whichever way you look at it, I was attached to the Office of Naval Intelligence, was given a Q clearance, which is top secret, and an SI, which is sensitive information, and eventually an SCI, which is sensitive compartmentalized information, because I was on the intelligence briefing team of the Commander-in-Chief of the Pacific Fleet, and had to put together information which was used to give him briefings, and so I had to have access to this information and be able to put it together. And I discovered later, much later, because I didn't know at the time that this was unusual, that it's extremely unusual for anybody to ever have access to the amount of information that I did. Because of that, I was able to see that our government was not playing ball with us according to the rules that we were playing ball. It's like playing football against a team that has a completely different rule book. And you're playing according to the rule book that you have, that you think is the rule book, and they're violating every rule, and they're getting away with it because they got a different rule book, and they're beating you, kicking your butt. And pretty soon the score is so out of whack that you wonder if you're even going to be able to make it to the locker room before the fans just kill you, you know. That's the kind of game we find ourselves in. And I discovered that the intelligence community, which I was a part of then, was actually in the process of creating situations to dismantle the sovereignty of the United States of America and bring about a one-world totalitarian socialist government. And up until that time, I was reared in an Air Force family. My father was a command pilot, retired, a lieutenant colonel. I had planned on literally going from service to service, and I was going to do all four services and serve my country for the rest of my life and then retire after 30 years. Stay in more than 30 if they let me. When I discovered these things, I left. So I only made it through the Air Force and the Navy. The Marines and the Coast Guard lost out, but I couldn't be a part of that. And it was a tremendous battle raging inside of me as to whether I should keep my mouth shut or whether I should tell somebody. Now, when you know what I knew and wasn't supposed to really know, the battle is something that you can't even imagine. It's worse than you can imagine when you know that all of these people out there are sleeping, and that they're being used and abused and lied to, and that they're ultimately going to be enslaved. And you know that the consequence of telling them what's going to happen is they're going to hate you, and those that you're telling on are going to come after you. And then you have to confront yourself in a manner that you've never confronted yourself before, which is, to me, was worse than going to war. I fought in Vietnam. I knew what war was about. I'd been shot at. I sat out on a riverboat in the middle of a river where you can't hide, and there's no trees, and you can't dig a foxhole in the deck or in the river. You have to stay there and fight. And I passed that test. But this was a different kind of a war. You see, because I was at war with myself, I wasn't afraid to go out on that boat in the middle of the river and get shot at and shoot back and know that there was a chance that I could die. But I didn't want to be an outcast with the American people or with my government. And the alternative to that was cowardice, and I didn't want to be a coward. So I started doing what I'm doing, and I got to tell you, in the first, it was extremely difficult, and Annie can tell you some horror stories about where that put our family. And they made it impossible for me to work for anybody else. So I determined if they won't let me work for anybody else, I'll work for myself, and my job will be to expose them and make their lives just as uncomfortable as it possibly can be, and try to wake up the American people. One of the consequences of doing that is that the people that you're trying to help turn against you and attack you viciously because they don't want to hear what you have to say. They don't want to hear that their lives are being lived in fantasy. They don't want to know that the people in government, not our government, but the people in government, are destroying this country. And that if they don't wake up, they're going to literally be enslaved in a socialist system. So they practice denial, rejection, and vicious attacks. So the reason I'm telling you this is not to make you feel sorry for me or my family or to glorify what I'm doing, because there is no glory in it at all. There's no glory in war either, I mean the real shooting kind. If you're in a militia and you think that this ultimate conflict is going to be glorious and wonderful and the outcome is going to be the greatest thing, you better think again. It's going to be terrible. It's going to be bloody. It's going to be gory. It's going to be miserable. And we cannot be certain of the outcome, whatever it may be. We can only be certain that we, if we are doing the right thing for the right reasons, are doing those right things for the right reasons. And we can also be certain that we don't want anything like that to happen. And we have determined, at least those aligned with me and with whom I am aligned with, that we will never be the instigators of anything that would ever bring such a thing down upon the American people. But we know from studying our enemies that it is unavoidable, and they will bring it to us, because that is their history. We know that. So we want to be prepared with knowledge, and foresight, and abilities to be able to persevere and hopefully to be able to triumph and to be able to restore some kind of a world that will be good for all of us to live in, based upon truth and honesty and freedom rather than lies and deceptions and manipulations and symbols with no substance. Because that's the world that they're creating now. You can see it all around you. And it's going to get worse if they continue to garner the power into their hands. The more people who wake up, the better able we will be to combat this and take power back away from them and put it in the hands of the people that it belongs in, which is all of the people. That's where it belongs. But not in a democracy. Democracies are indispensable to socialism. V.I. Lenin said that, and he meant it. Because the first step that you need for socialism to be able to thrive and take control is for the people to understand that they can vote themselves the benefits of the treasury. You see, people would really rather be children. We spend a lot of our life as children waiting to become a responsible adult so that we can leave home and contract and buy a car on payments and get married and all this kind of stuff. And as soon as we really realize how hard that is to do, we spend the rest of our life trying to jump back and become children and find some daddy to take care of us. That's why socialism is so attractive to so many people. It promises them the security. It promises them a job. It promises them food. It promises them everything that they've ever wanted. But socialism demands a price. If I'm going to be your daddy, you got to do what I tell you. If I'm going to be your daddy, you get up when I say get up. You go to bed when I say go to bed. You work at the job that I tell you to work at. You don't talk about the things that I don't want to hear. And so, you begin. Children and give up their freedoms in anticipation of this promised utopian world that socialism never ever delivers. It always delivers in slavery. So what I want you to understand from this little talk right now, before we get into anything serious here, is that by coming here, you have raised your hand and said, I volunteer to fight this battle on behalf of freedom and responsibility. And I'm putting myself on the line because I'm stepping out. When you do that, don't expect any glory. Don't expect any rewards. Don't expect medals in your chest. Don't expect anybody to talk good about you, because chances are, like many of you have already realized, they're going to talk bad about you. Your own family may throw you out. But understand in your heart that you're doing the right thing. And that should be the greatest reward that anybody can ever expect, is know that you're doing the right thing. If you know that, if you feel it, nobody can ever hurt you and you'll never be afraid. Because the key to winning this battle is divorcing fear. I discovered that a long time ago. Nothing scares me now. Nothing at all. Nothing. There's nothing that they can do to me that will make me stop. Anything they do to me makes me fight all that much harder, because I understand the consequences of losing. You see, if we lose, they can do so much more to us and to our loved ones than they can do now that they are doing already. So, if I can give you a piece of advice, it's this. If you're afraid of what they can do to you, get off the battlefield, because they've already beaten you. If you're in that place where you have no fear, step right up here beside me and we'll mow them down. We'll destroy them with information and with truth, which is the most powerful weapon that there is. Truth just mows them down. They can't stand up in front of it because they don't know how to tell the truth. They don't know how to prevail against the truth. They can't even begin to fight when you stand up with the truth as your weapon. Now, I'm not talking about just being able to tell the truth, but back it up with documentation and sources and facts and figures. And the more of their own documentation and facts and figures and sources that you can use, the better. It just mows them over. Like young saplings in front of a bulldozer. It is amazing to watch how they just turn into withering sacks of nothing, really. Like the Wicked Witch in the Wizard of Oz, when a bucket of water was thrown on her, she just melted into a pool of slime. And that's really what happens when these people are confronted with the truth. They don't know what it is. They don't know how to deal with it. They've never used it. They've never told it. They are nothing but skeletons of symbols that relate to some vague utopian dream that they can't even describe to you. And they really believe in their hearts that they're doing the right thing because they've been taught by somebody that it's the right thing to do, and they've been brainwashed to a level that those of us who haven't experienced that really can't equate to. So you're not dealing with people who are lying to you to intentionally commit evil acts. You're dealing with people who are lying to you because they believe that the end result of all of their deception and manipulation and torture and terrorism and everything else is going to be a better world. Never mind, they can't describe this better world to you or how it's going to work or how they're going to deal with the tendency of human nature to be lazy and seek out the easy way and how they're going to do away with crime. Did you hear Bob Dole on television the other night when he gave his acceptance speech? I'm going to finally take all of the guns out of the hands of the criminals. If I could have asked him right at that moment, Mr. Dole, exactly how do you intend to do that? We've got every law in the world that says criminals can't use firearms. If they get caught with firearms, they have a felony conviction. That's another felony. It adds so much onto their sentence and all of this other stuff. How are you going to do that? I'll bet you everything that I own or ever could possibly own in my life, he could not answer that question. Because there isn't an answer to it. The only way you could possibly do that is take every gun in the world and destroy it. And in the first place, you couldn't find every gun in the world because I know where an awful lot of them are that are never going to be found. Except by the people who need to find them when the time comes and they're needed. So, this is what I'm talking about. You have to be very careful when you hear things like that. I'm going to take all of the guns out of the hands of the criminals. Translated, you know what that means? He's going to take your guns away from you because you're not a criminal. You're honest. And you just might be dumb enough to give it to them. But I don't think so. And I don't think a lot of the people in this country who we know are sheeple are even dumb enough to do that. So, bear in mind as we go through this next these 5 days, and we teach you what we're going to teach you, that you're going to be fighting a battle with this information and other information you can get from other sources without reward. Most of our people are never recognized by anybody. And they are some of the greatest heroes I've ever known in my life, who put their lives on the line, taken great risks, done things I cannot tell you about, in order to produce the information that we air in the Hour of the Time, print in Veritas, and use in many other manners that I can't tell you about either, in order to win this war. And they're all either CADI members or members of the intelligence service, and we even have some people who are not members who contribute information on a regular basis, just like clockwork. We administer and operate the largest civilian intelligence gathering organization in the world, and it is the most successful, bar none. A lot of what you're going to hear and see here is a result of their efforts, not mine. I want you to understand that. But I cannot name them or give them credit because the instant that I do, they can no longer become effective. They cannot do their job if people know who they are. For that reason, because she is so well known, Michelle Moore will be relieved of her station chief duties very shortly. And a new station chief will be appointed for those four states who will not be known, so that our work can continue. And so that some of the current threats that are now facing Michelle and David will be removed. Okay, let's take about a 5-minute break, and then the learning process will begin for all of us. Okay, everybody please rise and face the flag. Face the flag, guys. There you go.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all.
Thank you. Still get a little chill when the flag passes by, you hear the Star Spangled Banner. I always do. You ever get that feeling when the UN flag goes by? Anybody? Any other flag? No. You'll notice there's no yellow or orange fringe on this flag. So we are in the real United States of America today. The flag with the fringe indicates a military jurisdiction, not admiralty, military. And you can find it in the law, you can also find it in the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and you can also find in the United States Code the description of the flag of the United States of America. It says nothing about an orange fringe whatsoever. You can actually force a judge to remove the yellow-fringed flag from a court and take off his black robe by quoting the law and demanding the jurisdiction of the United States of America when you go into a court. And they have to do it. They do not want it read into the record that you're sitting in a court of military jurisdiction under admiralty law. It's amazing what you can accomplish when you understand who you are and who they are and what flag is flying in front of you and what it means and what kind of jurisdiction prevails in what place. And it will also bring you an awful lot of respect and admiration, and a tremendous amount of danger follows along with that too. When did we start seeing the gold-fringed flag or the orange-fringed flag or the yellow-fringed flag? And you'll see various tints of these colors. When did we first start seeing those flags in our courtrooms and in our schools and flying from flagpoles? And anybody know? Who said Civil War? That's correct. Civil War. Why? We were at war in the United States, and the president declared martial law, didn't he? It's the first time that martial law was declared within the United States of America. The nation was divided up into what? Military districts under military rule. What was suspended? No. Constitution does not provide for it to be suspended under any circumstances ever.
Habeas corpus.
Habeas corpus was suspended by the president. Who was the president at that time? Abraham Lincoln. What happened when he suspended habeas corpus? Anybody know? He was called a traitor. People hated him for that. He was viciously attacked. You can't suspend habeas corpus. How many of you knew that? It's the truth. The Constitution does provide, under an emergency, the president can suspend habeas corpus, and that's all. He cannot suspend anything else. He cannot do away with anything else. He cannot set aside the Constitution or the balance of power or anything else. And in the Civil War, he was held to that limitation. And even though the Constitution provided that he could suspend habeas corpus, he was viciously attacked by the American citizens. Because he I like to walk, guys.
I've always been that way.
He dared to do something that people in this country had fought so hard to obtain for themselves. You see, back then, people were not sheeple. They were people. They understood the law. Most people would never go to a lawyer to represent them in court. They understood the law. The law was very simple. The law is still very simple, but you're taught that it's too difficult for you. And they make it hard for you if you try to represent yourself. So in these military districts, they were under military rule, but they still had to pay attention to the Constitution. The only thing that they could really do was arrest you without virtue of a writ of habeas corpus and hold you for as long as they wanted. Sometimes people were held for the whole length of the war and afterwards without even having a hearing because of that. And that's why it's dangerous to allow the government to mess with habeas corpus or anything else. But they still had to obey the rest of the Constitution. But they understood that they didn't want to, so they began to dismantle it. The first thing they did was do away with the Judge Advocate General of the United States and replace the Judge Advocate General of the United States with the Attorney General. The Attorney General's job was to administer justice in the military districts under martial law. And 5 years after the war ended, they created the Justice Department to administer justice in the military districts and the occupied nation of the Confederacy. And they outstepped their bounds even then, because the military districts were never done away with. Martial law was never rescinded. And those same military districts exist today and are now what? Federal district courts. And where territories existed or land existed that was not a part of the United States, they just extended the military districts and established federal district courts in those districts as those areas became the property or came under the jurisdiction of the United States of America. And then later they became states and came under the jurisdiction of the states that they became. They still fooled the people into thinking that they came under the district courts. So when you step into any courtroom that has that fringe around the flag, you have stepped into a military tribunal. You are being judged or tried or processed under admiralty and equity under the statutes of the United States Code. But only
if you volunteer to accept it by not preserving your rights and raising an objection and challenging the jurisdiction of the court. So I want you to all understand this. The United States federal government has jurisdiction only in the District of Columbia, in the territories owned by the United States government, such as Puerto Rico, the United States Virgin Islands, portions of the Marshall Islands, which are under the trust of the United States government since World War II, American Samoa, dockyards, forts, federal courthouses, but only if they sit upon land that has been deeded and ceded by the legislature of the state in which they reside. Something recently happened here in Oklahoma City. Somebody blew up the Mura Federal Building. The United States government immediately took jurisdiction. They took custody of those who were arrested and charged with the crime. Whether they are guilty or not still remains to be seen. Was that legal? Why?
That land was never ceded by the state of Oklahoma to the federal government.
That's right. The federal government had no jurisdiction whatsoever and still continues to have no jurisdiction. Why are they still acting as if they do? Nobody has challenged it. Nobody knows enough to challenge it who lives in the state of Oklahoma. If they do, they're afraid to challenge it. Not only that, but the government of the state of Oklahoma is in concert with the federal government. The jurisdiction really was, is, and will always be with the state of Oklahoma and not with the federal government. Because the land upon which the courthouse sat was never deeded and or ceded to the federal government by the state legislature of the state of Oklahoma. Do you realize what that would do if all of these people in Oklahoma City who suffered from that bombing understood that? Well, they're going to, eventually. But they don't now. So, if you understand who you are, what the law really is, what the limits of jurisdiction really are, you can accomplish an awful lot by yourself. And the quickest way to figure out most of it is simply to read the Constitution for the United States of America, which is a contract which binds the United States government and holds it only to what is granted to it by that document, and forbids it from taking anything else that is not granted by that document, and specifically states that anything not granted to the federal government, nor prohibited to the states or to the people, remains with the states, and if the states fail to exercise it, with the people. The law provides for a militia, doesn't it? In the states and in the federal government and in the Constitution. If the state fails to form and provide a militia, what does the Constitution say? The people retain that power if the state fails to exercise it. That's why there's been no hearings on the militia. That's why nobody has come against the militia. That's why no legal action has been taken against the militia as militia instead of individuals who may have committed a crime and never will until they're actually ready to go to war against the people of the United States of America. Because it's fully grounded in the law and is fully constitutional and lawful. You have to understand what the Constitution recognizes as pre-existing cannot ever be tampered with. What does the Constitution say about the militia? Okay. So, before the Constitution was approved, before the Ten Amendments were approved, it recognized that a militia is necessary for the security of a free state. Is that correct? What else does it say in the Constitution about the militia? That's correct, but specifically about the militia. Congress shall have the ability to call up the militia. It didn't say Congress has the ability to create the militia, did it? It recognized the militia as a pre-existing force. That in time of need, Congress has the ability to call up. And the Congress can equip, arm, and train the militia. But the training of the officers of the militia shall be performed by the state. What does that tell you about the National Guard, who is trained by the federal government? It's not the militia, is it? You see, the law, the Constitution, clearly describe what the militia is and what it is not. So when somebody tells you the National Guard is the militia, that's not the truth. The militia can only be called up for what? What does the Constitution say? No. Repel invasion, suppress insurrection, and execute the laws of the Union. Not enforce, execute. That gives the militia an awful lot of power, doesn't it? You better bet your boots it does. So, if they send National Guardsmen to Saudi Arabia, is that a function of the militia? If they send National Guardsmen to fight in Desert Storm, is that a function of the militia? If it was the militia, they could not do that because the militia can only be used for three things: repel invasion, suppress insurrection, and execute the laws of the Union. If the federal government is ignoring the laws of the Union and subverting them and actually performing criminal actions, what does the Constitution say is the duty of the militia? Execute the laws of the Union. What could be more clear? See, they baffled you with so much bullshit. You've got it all right in front of your eyes and you can't even see it because they've told you that you can't understand the law. And nothing could be farther from the truth. Our forefathers, our founding fathers, were experts in the English language. Do you really think they all got together and wrote down a bunch of laws and prepared a constitution and intentionally wrote it in a vague manner so that nobody would ever understand what they wrote? No, they debated for days, sometimes, just the use of one word so that their meaning would be clear. Their meaning is clear. There is no misunderstanding, and it doesn't need to be interpreted. They wrote what they meant what they said, and it is the supreme law of the land. Now, over 200 years later, they're baffling us all with bullshit that we can't understand, that it needs to be interpreted, that it was written over 200 years ago by a bunch of doddering old men who didn't understand the complexities of the modern day. Is that the truth? No, they specifically wrote it to be able to deal with the complexities of any time because it's a living document. It provides within that document for the means of amending or changing it, but never, never abolishing it. It does not provide that it can be abolished, but only amended. And it can only be amended in the manner specifically outlined within the document. So no judge sitting on a bench can make a ruling that changes the Constitution, no matter how much he would like to, and no matter how many of them think that they have done it. Congress cannot pass a law that amends or changes or ignores or flies in the face of the supreme law of the land, which is the Constitution, even though they have tried to do it and continue to try to do it all the time. They can't do it. They can't do it lawfully. They can do anything they want if the population does not object, does not demand that they stay within the confines of the Constitution, and does not provide for a militia to execute the laws of the Union and make sure that they stay within those boundaries. The Constitution only gives the government very few, very limited powers. I wonder what makes the American people think that this guy, Joe Blow, who was one of them yesterday, now runs for office, gets elected, goes to Congress, is now smarter than they are. Anybody ever figure that out? I can never figure it out. But you see, when somebody pins on that thing, Congressman, Representative, Democrat, Ohio, all of a sudden, the people that he used to live with, who knew him, when he got caught with his pants down behind the barn, forget all that, and now he's some kind of a wizard with a super brain. The truth is, he's the same kid they went to school with, and he's just as dumb as he always was. He doesn't know anything more about the law than they do. He goes to Washington, D.C. He doesn't learn any more about the law than he did. Instead, they surround him with advisors who tell him what to do and give him laws to introduce and pass. And that's the way Washington's really run, by special interest groups who bullshit these congressmen and pay them off and promise them cushy jobs when they get too old to be congressmen again or go back and run the dealership in Podunk or wherever they came from. And they don't even know half the time that the laws that they're introducing to be passed are even unconstitutional because they never read the Constitution. Any more than the people who lived in the town where they lived read the Constitution. Okay? Just want to put things in perspective for you. So when you start talking about this stuff, when you talk about the orange fringe on the flag, and you talk about jurisdiction, they don't know what you're talking about. Because they don't understand it any more than you did before you learned it. They don't know it. They are just as influenced by the press as everybody else in the country. And remember, before they got elected, they were sheeple. What makes you think they're not now? They're just sheeple with a little more direction. And that's the truth. They become now the Judas goat. You think the Judas goat knows that he's a Judas goat? No, the goat is trained to lead the sheep into the shearing pens where they're sheared. He's then trained to lead the sheep up the ramp to the slaughterhouse. A little gate is open. The Judas goat goes out because he's got to lead the next flock. He never finds out what happens in there. He doesn't know. He doesn't know. Your representatives and senators, for the most part, don't know. The leadership always knows. They wouldn't be leaders if they didn't know, because they have to sell their soul to become a leader. They know. There has to be a meeting ground between the Constitutional Republic and the deception that it has become. Because I'm going to tell you right now, I hope nobody in here has the illusion that we're ever going to go back to the way things ever were. It's not going to happen. Because it would require a total dismantlement of society, business, industry, and government as we know it, and that would result in total chaos. So that's not going to happen. So we're never going to get what we're supposed to have never lost again. But we can go back to a much better world than what exists now and what they have planned for us. To get that, we have to understand what it was that we lost. And that requires a study of the law from the beginning. Now, all of the law in this country is based upon one event that took place in England many, many years ago. Does anybody know what that is? Magna Carta. What was the Magna Carta? What's the significance of that? What does it mean? Everybody knows the Magna Carta. It's like when I talk to school kids, they know there's a constitution. Well, what does it say?
Free speech.
What does free speech mean?
I don't know. I know there's some words I can't say.
Yes, sir.
The first time in written history that a document was written that guarantees the rights of men under their liege or sovereign.
Okay, did y'all hear what he said? I'm going to say it a little bit differently because what he said is not too accurate. It was a document in which the king relinquished some of his powers to the people and guaranteed that he would never use those powers again against the people, which gave the people a form of protection against the traditional oppressive and tyrannical measures used by kings and queens throughout history. So it's the first step toward freedom for the common man. What's the second document that's important to the history of this country? The Mayflower Compact. And after that, there's a whole bunch of them, which were compacts made with, by, and between people who established cities, colonies, and footholds upon these shores, which spelled out the laws under which they would live and the powers that the government they established would have and the powers that they would have, and their allegiances to kings, queens, are non-allegiances to kings, queens, etc., etc., etc. What is the first actual real document in law in this country? The Declaration of Independence. You've all got to read that. You must read it. You'll never understand anything about who you are and the powers that you have until you read that document. And don't let anybody ever fool you. It is the first document in law, not at law, in law, in this country. What does it say in that document? Who knows what it says? You don't have to quote it verbatim, but give me some idea of what it's all about. That's right. It set out a list of grievances against the King of England and said that since you have done these things to us, and we have been faithful to you, and we have not deserved any of this treatment, we are establishing in law, by our declaration, that we have the right to overthrow you, to cast off your chains, and to establish a government that will serve us according to the way we wish to be governed. And what does it say about that government that they're going to establish? It says if that government becomes oppressive, it is the duty of the people to cast it off and establish a government that suits them.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming up to the top of the hour for our network break. And make sure that you stay tuned for hour number two of tonight's Hour of the Time. As you have learned, the subject matter is engrossing and extremely important. And it gets even more engrossing and even more important and even much more interesting. So, don't go away. We'll be right back after the network break. the voice of freedom. This is the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. We now return you to the hour of the time. Welcome back to the Hour of the Time. You are listening tonight to a special two-hour edition. Tonight's broadcast is the first 2 hours of the opening of the Intelligence Service CAGI News Service Conference in Norman, Oklahoma on August the 19th, 1996. I hope that you're all taking notes. And, ladies and gentlemen, I hope that you understand that this is just 2 hours of the first day of the conference. It is sort of a kindergarten lecture, if you will, upon which much more was based. Thank you.
You've all got to read that. You see, this government, this nation was founded in revolution. It was founded upon the basis that the people determine the government under which they will live. And if that government oppresses them or chains them or becomes tyrannical, it is their duty. That's a heavy word, isn't it? It's their duty to cast it off. What they did was the ultimate achievement of human evolution. Throughout the history of the world, all men and women had been owned by somebody, had been slaves to some king, queen, emir, sultan, emperor, or system. And even in the old Roman Republic, they were never really free. They came close, but they weren't really free. For the first time in the history of the world, these people who founded this country became truly free sovereigns, kings and queens in their own right, and established a government to serve them and protect that sovereignty and protect the rights, not that the government gave them, not that they gave themselves, but which they said originated from the Creator. Now, when they talked about Creator, were they talking about some guy in white robes with a long flowing beard sitting on a throne somewhere up in heaven? Were they? Anybody know? No, they weren't. You see, they were deists. Who knows what a deist is? Anybody? Somebody want to take a crack at it? What does deist mean? What does it mean? Nobody in here has the slightest idea? Pardon? When they described their God, what did they describe it as? Nature's God. A deist believes that we should be ruled by the inimitable laws of the universe. They believe in nature's God. There's a big misconception in this country that all of our founding fathers were Christians. Most of them were deists. They lived like Christians, and most of them went and attended Christian churches for much of their life in order to be able to get along in the community. But you'll find that in every one of their lives, there came a time when they stopped going to church. They didn't go anymore. They and everyone around them were influenced by Christian ideas, Christian thought, and Christian teachings, because that was the world that they lived in. All of them, everybody who came to this country in the beginning, fled the old world to come over here because they were opportunists, they were escaping religious persecution, or they were criminals. Some of them brought slaves and indentured servants with them. So if you think this country was founded by a whole bunch of great people, idealists who came over here to found the Republic, you're wrong. It's just not true. Most of the people who came were Christians. They were Puritans, what were called Puritans then. There were many, many sects and denominations and churches and dogmas and teachings that if you really went back and studied them, they don't resemble anything that is taught in any church in this country today. They were participating in the great rebellion against what? The Catholic Church. They were Protestants, Protestants, protesters. You see, back then, anybody who protested could found their own church
become their own branch of Protestantism, call it whatever they wanted. And there were so many who were freeing themselves from the chains of the church that there were literally hundreds of thousands of denominations and groups and sects all over the place. Over the years, the weak ones, the bad ones, the mistaken ones, the blatantly false, phony ones have fallen by the wayside. Others have joined together. And now there are still an awful lot of different ones, but there are not as many different ones as there were then. Our founding fathers were the product of the resurgence of reason and intelligence, which came out of the Dark Ages. All of them belonged to secret fraternal organizations who had been persecuted during that time. They were scientists, men of learning, men of reason, who determined that such a thing as the Dark Ages were never going to happen again. They were going to set men free from religion and from government in order that they could set men free from kings and queens. They established this country to give the common man sovereignty and topple the kings and queens from off their thrones. That is what is stated in the Declaration of Independence. Set man free from everything except his own mind. From that point on, anyone who lived in this country was only held prisoner or bound to the tyranny and oppression of their own belief system. Because in this country, they were truly free after that document was put forth. It took a lot of fighting and a lot of dying and a lot of grief and a lot of suffering and a lot of loss to hold on to it. But they did that, didn't they? And then they convened a convention and developed the second document in law. And what is that? The Articles of Confederation. Were the Articles of Confederation ever rejected? Were they ever thrown out? Were they ever renounced? Recalled? No. They still apply. You can still take them into a court of law. They are still just as binding as they ever were. So you must read, in order to understand this country and understand the law, the Articles of Confederation. Then it was determined that the central government created by the Articles of Federation didn't have any power at all and was useless. And there was kind of a chaos occurring in this union. So they sent delegates to remedy this problem. And they were supposed to just go through the Articles of Confederation and find out what it is that had failed them and propose and adopt amendments in order to make it right. What did they do? They did something they weren't supposed to do. They didn't have any power to do. And this is what many people misunderstand about the Constitution for the United States of America. It's actually a rogue document that came out of an unlawful procedure for which the people who did it had no power to perform. Was not their commission to do that. Their commission was to fix the Articles of Confederation by amendment. Or actually, not even to fix them by amendment, but to discover amendments to be proposed to the legislatures of the states of the Confederation, who then would decide whether they wanted to adopt this new Articles of Confederation with amendments or not. That's really what their charter was. What did they do? They got 7 of the 13 states together in delegation and took a vote to write a whole new constitution. They tried to do that again just a couple of years ago. What did they call that? Philadelphia 2. They wanted to get representatives from all the states empowered by their state legislatures to represent the states to restore states' rights, is what they said. But what they asked for was exactly 7/13 representation so they could do the same thing all over again. And they even admitted it. We have their speeches. They were going to go there and do exactly what our founding fathers did. They were going to take a vote, write a whole new constitution, or adopt one that has most probably already been written. And all of a sudden, announce to the states that, hey, it's a whole new ball game. But we stopped it. We stopped it dead. But that's what our founding fathers did. They got together and they wrote a whole new basis of government, a whole new contract. Then they took it back to the states and said, here it is. They said, well, what happened to the Articles of Confederation and the amendments that you were supposed to come up for our approval? Well, we met in delegation, and they weren't even empowered by their state legislatures, by the way, which these people wanted to do. And the states took a look at it and said, nope, we're not going to accept this unless you prepare an amendment to it which will guarantee that it will not become oppressive and take away the creator-endowed rights. And what did that become? The Bill of Rights. When that was done, and only when that was done, the Constitution was adopted. And you can see that in the preamble to the Bill of Rights. How many of you did not know there was a preamble to the Bill of Rights? There is. And it specifically states in that preamble, we're not going to accept any of this until you guarantee our rights. And that's what the Bill of Rights were for. They were afraid that the government would become oppressive with the limited powers that were given to it. What does that tell you about the intent of the founders in writing the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the states in accepting it? They wanted to make sure that the government did not have power, did not have jurisdiction, did not become oppressive or tyrannical. In the law, intent is everything. If there's any question in the law, you go to the intent of those who wrote and passed the law. And that is how you determine the solution to the question. Isn't that incredible that most Americans haven't got the slightest idea about any of that? I find it staggering. It's a monumental error. You know, most people have never read the Constitution in their life. And the ones that did, usually read it in high school, were forced to read it. Most of them pretended they read it and didn't really read it at all. If they were tested on it, either got a C or a D or an F. Did you know that? It's the truth. You know they don't teach it in schools today? You know why? Because of what I just taught you. Anybody who reads it and has a brain and understands English, all of a sudden has a new outlook on what's going on. When you question what they're doing and say, hey, you can't do that, it's unconstitutional. They know the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and they know they must obey the law. But to get around it and get you to accept it, they say, oh, it was written by a bunch of doddering old men over 200 years ago who didn't understand the complexities of the modern age. I say, oh, well, I guess it's okay then. Here, take my guns. Take my children. Take my wife. Take my house. Take everything. Take my dog. Which they will. Recently they took Sugar Bear. We mounted an expedition and got him back. Took my dog. He went down to visit some chickens and they went and got him. He didn't hurt any chickens. He was out of my sight, and that's not good. So anyway, you've got to read the Constitution. It's not hard to understand. It's very short. It's clear, concise, and to the point. And then you must read the Bill of Rights. And then you must understand everything after the Bill of Rights is in question. We've discovered that the 13th Amendment does not match the 13th Amendment that's in the Constitution now. But is the real 13th Amendment, by the way. The 16th Amendment was never ratified by the states. But yet they're telling you that it's law. It can't be law if it wasn't ratified, because it must be ratified according to the terms set forth in the Constitution for amending the document. There are other things that are wrong in those amendments. So they're in the process of destroying this country from within by deception, preying upon the emotions and the ignorance and the apathy and, yes, even the stupidity of the American people. Seek ye the truth, and the truth will make you free. Nothing else can do it. Nothing else. A nation or world of people who will not use their intelligence are no better than animals who will not, or who do not have intelligence. Such people are beasts of burden and stakes on the table by choice and consent. Let me say that again. You should all really write it down. A nation or world of people. A nation or world of people who will not use their intelligence. A nation or world of people who will not use their intelligence are no better than animals who do not have intelligence. A nation or world of people who will not use their intelligence are no better than animals who do not have intelligence. Listen very carefully to this. Such people are beasts of burden and stakes on the table by choice and consent. A nation or world of people who will not use their intelligence are no better than animals who do not have intelligence. Such people are beasts of burden and stakes on the table by choice and consent. Pardon? I just said that. No, you'll find that written in a document entitled Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars, which is chapter 1 in my book, Behold a Pale Horse, which outlines the method of destroying this country from within and enslaving the citizens in a socialist system, and exactly how they're going to do it. How do you feel hearing that? Beasts of burden and stakes on the table by choice and consent. That's pretty heavy, isn't it? But isn't that the reality of most people? I know people who used to work in automobile assembly lines, and they stand in one place, and a bucket of paint would spill over here, and the guy, well, it's not my job. or somebody need help lifting something heavy, but because it wasn't in his job description, he couldn't do it because it's against union rules. Now, he was making $16 an hour to put two bolts in a door and fasten two pieces of metal together, and he didn't even have to use his muscles because he had an air gun. That job, what did he say?
I'm too old to be retrained. I want my old job back. We've got to force these factories to stay open.
Beasts of burden and stakes on the table by choice and consent. Stupid beasts of burden. Now, Joe Blow Auto Worker doesn't want to hear that. He hates my guts every time I say it, but it's the truth. And I'm just using Joe Blow Auto Worker as an example because it fits almost everybody in this country. So we've got to reverse that. We've got to change it around. There was a time in this country where you had to know the law, where people were educated. And if they weren't educated in some university or in the little red brick schoolhouse, they educated themselves in a library. There wasn't anybody who couldn't read. There wasn't anybody that you could get over on. And there wasn't anybody who wasn't suspicious of big government. What happened? Why is it that they all understood the Constitution and you tried to infringe upon their rights, they would shoot you? Now, nobody even knows what their rights are, where they came from, or what protects it. They don't even know what the Constitution says. They don't even know what's going on in their hometown, much less on the state or the federal level. How did this happen? They never read a law book in their life. Don't understand what shall means. How many understand what shall means? What's it mean? Shall means may. What does may mean? It means you don't have to if you don't want to. But see, there's a lot of laws that say, you shall do this. You shall do that. What it means is you can do it if you want to, but you don't really have to. But everybody's running around doing it because they think shall means you will. Or else. How many of you know that in a courtroom, words don't mean what they mean outside the courtroom? How many of you know that phrases have great meaning in a courtroom that don't mean anything outside the courtroom? How many of you know that a Supreme Court judge said there's nobody in jail who did not volunteer to go? It's on record. That's pretty heavy, isn't it? You know how you volunteer to go? You open your mouth. You open your mouth, you don't challenge jurisdiction, and you don't even know anything about the law. Are you a resident of the state of Arizona? Yes, Your Honor. What is your address? You give your address. You've just declared yourself to be a thing and not a human being. Things don't have rights. Things have addresses. People move around all the time. You can't put an address on a person. Unless it's a person under the law. What is a person under the law? A corporation. An artificial entity. Are you persons? No. Call Pooh a kid and see what she says to you. I'm not a kid. A kid is a baby goat. And that's the truth. You are what? What are you? What are you? You're a human being. You're a living human. That's what you are. Unless you want to be a thing. And I don't understand it, you see. Everybody's been trying, especially women, you've been trying to stop being things for a long time. Why do you insist upon still being things?
Ladies and gentlemen, this special broadcast of the Hour of the Time is brought to you by Swiss America Trading. They specialize in real money, non-confiscatable, non-reportable, hard assets. What is described in the document that is under discussion in this 2 hours, the Constitution for the United States of America? Real money. No state shall tender in payment of debt anything other than gold or silver coin. If that is true, if the Constitution is the supreme law of the land and that has never been amended or changed, what is going on? Is this prima facie evidence that the Constitution is not in force? I say that it is, that it's being subverted, ignored, thrown in the trash can, flushed down the toilet, if you will. There will come a reckoning. There will come a day of restoration. I can guarantee you that. There will come, in the meantime, a total breakdown, the collapse of the economy and society as we know it during the process of restoration. It will not be brought on by us. It will be brought on by those who are subverting the government. How do I know this? Because they must fulfill all of the provisions of the planks of the Communist Manifesto, and one that has not been fulfilled yet is the elimination of the middle class, which can only be brought about by a complete and total economic breakdown. You see, they have implemented almost everything else in this country that is listed as a plank on the Communist Manifesto of Marx and Engels. If you don't believe it, get a copy and read it. Look around you. You will soon discover that you've had blinders on for many years. What you say you are against, you are now living under. And it will get worse. Much, much worse. You need real money. What you're carrying in your pocket is not what you think it is. The Federal Reserve is not federal, it's a private corporation. A private corporation. There is no reserve. It is not a note. You can redeem a note for the value pledged against it. It is an instrument of debt. There is always collateral connected with a note. There is no collateral connected with what you're carrying in your pocket. It is not a note by any definition, legal or not. It is not currency, for currency must be exchangeable for what it represents. It is certainly not a dollar. A dollar is nothing but a unit of measurement that describes a specific weight and purity of silver coin in the law. Can you take your dollar to a Federal Reserve Bank and exchange it for what the law says a dollar is? No, you cannot. For our coinage has been debased, ladies and gentlemen. You can't even use that thing for toilet paper because it'll turn your derriere green, I guarantee you. You can't write on it. It's already covered with ink. It is absolutely worthless. It is a deception. It is a lie. It is counterfeit. When enough people discover how they have been taken for a ride, and when they discover that these are the instruments of the theft of the nation from out from under our feet, while we watch, ignorant, apathetic, blind and stupid. And some of us stand back and watch in awe and wonder, knowing what we must do to prepare for the future. And we are doing that, and you can too, by calling Swiss America Trading. The first thing you should do is thank them for sponsoring the Hour of the Time and backing the Voice of Freedom, the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. And then ask how you can get your hands on some real money. And do it now. 1-800-289-2646. 1-800-BUY-COIN. That's 1-800-289-2646. 6:4. To a special edition of the Hour of the Time. This was recorded on the first day of the Intelligence Service CAGI News Service Conference in Norman, Oklahoma, on August 19, 1996.
Stop it now. Learn who you are. Learn what you are. Learn where you live. Learn what the law is. Learn who has jurisdiction over you, and there's not very many entities, agencies, governments, or people who have jurisdiction over you. And it's amazing. How many of you really understood what the Freeman situation was all about? Well, you're honest. One person. They are right in their points of law. You know what they did wrong? They created a banking system when the law says you can't do that. They were right in who they are. They're right in setting up their township. They are right in that they could have their own court. They were right in that they could appoint their own sheriff. They were right in they didn't fall into the jurisdiction of anybody else. Because the state stopped being the state according to the organic constitution a long time ago and has become a corporate entity of the federal government. They were right. They only did one thing wrong. They created a banking system that they had no legal right to create unless they kept it completely outside of the Federal Reserve System. You want to get in trouble real fast? Create something outside of the allowable instruments of banking of the Federal Reserve System and mix it in with the Federal Reserve System, and you're going to go to jail. They could have created their own currency. They could have created their own bartering system, as long as it had real substance behind it, as long as they kept it within their own selves, their own little community, and nothing would have ever happened to them. But they messed with the Federal Reserve System, and you can't do that. You know why you can't do it? Number one, it's illegal, but you're not subject to those laws. Unless you're a thing, or a corporation, or an artificial entity, or an employee of the federal government. Pardon? No. What created the Federal Reserve System? Nope. A meeting on Jekyll Island of wealthy bankers and millionaires, billionaires, some of them were, created it long before Congress ever thought of it. They then went and coerced a sitting president and Congress into adopting it and creating a central bank, which is not an agency of the federal government, but which is a private corporation whose stock is held by these families that created it. And there is no reserve. Now do you understand? And Congress has no power to do it. Congress has the power to what? Coin money. What is money? a specific weight of measurement and purity of silver coin. Is it a dollar? Dollar is the unit of measurement. It is no more a dollar than milk is a quart. How many of you ever looked up the definition of note? You see how you can start and go through and just carry it right on down the line and you can see the destruction that comes with it? How many of you have ever looked in a legal dictionary to find out what the definition of a note is? Does anybody know what the definition of a note is? Pardon? A note is a promise to pay. Promise to pay what? A debt. So a note is an instrument of debt. But can you take a Federal Reserve note to the Federal Reserve and say, I've got your note, pay me? They'll laugh at you. Why will they laugh at you? Because it's not a note. It's a lie. It's worth nothing. Has no backing. And there is no promise to pay. It is legal tender. What does legal tender mean? It means if I come to you and say, in exchange for that chair back there, I will give you this. If you agree to that, we've made a transaction, even though this is worthless. That's what legal tender means. I can legally tender that as payment for something. Although, when I buy that chair, have I satisfied the value of the chair? Have I? No, because it has no worth, no substance, no backing. So have I really purchased the chair? No, because the law says you cannot own something if you purchased it without exchanging a fair value agreed upon by both parties. Even though you agree to take my legal tender, if it has no value, it is not a transaction, and I do not own the chair. That is why, instead of having the legal and lawful papers that tell you that you own your automobile, what do you have? A certificate of title. What is a certificate of title? Has anybody ever looked it up? Certifies that there is a title resting in the hands of the true owner. Who holds it? The state. How about your house? What do you get? You get a registered deed or a warranted deed, right? What do they mean? That's right. There's a warrant that there is a deed for that property, but you don't have it. Whoever has it really owns it. And by this method, they are slowly but surely stealing everything in the nation. Stealing it. By fraud. And they are garnering all this property and wealth into their own hands. And when they get ready to take it, they will. Are we going to give it to them? Not me, not without a fight. They get it over my dead body, if they get it. I always hear the argument, but gee, you don't want to die. Why can't you just adopt the system? I mean, this is dangerous. What are you doing? What I want to know is how come nobody ever came and told me that when they sent me to Vietnam? Gee, it's dangerous to go there. They're shooting at you. You could die. Nobody ever said that to me. Instead, what did they say?
Oh, you're a hero. You're fighting for your country.
And then I came back. They spit on me. What the hell's going on? You want to know why there's veterans in VA hospitals? Because they can't figure out what the hell happened to them. They can't figure it out. They wanted to be like their dad, who came home from World War II and still marches in the parade, and everybody goes, hooray. And they got spit on. Some of us figured it out, so it didn't destroy us. A lot of us didn't figure it out and have been destroyed. So, here I am really fighting for my country, in my country, really doing what I should be doing, and everybody's warning me. Oh, isn't that dangerous? Aren't you afraid? What kind of bullshit is that? Oh, let's go fight a war in Desert Storm and free Kuwait. Oh, he's a patriot. Send him over there. Great. Get your gun, Johnny.
Bill, that's really dangerous what you're doing up there.
You understand what's going on here? We're being screwed with big time. I mean, really big time. Wrong is right, and right is wrong. And there isn't any in between. And everything is topsy-turvy upside down. And everybody's buying it. Because they don't understand the roots. They don't understand what is supposed to be. They don't understand who they are or what they are. They don't even understand what freedom is anymore. In a recent poll, they went out on the street and asked young people if they ever heard of the Bill of the Rights, the Bill of Rights. What do you think were the answers they got? You would be amazed at the answers that they got from these young people who didn't even have the slightest idea what they were talking about.
Bill of Rights, well, you can take it back and exchange it.
That's really an answer. That's one of the answers. The whole bunch of them, none of them had anything to do with what the Bill of Rights really is or is supposed to be. So, you've got to go back and start at the beginning. You've got to read the Magna Carta. You've got to read the Mayflower Compact. You've got to read the Declaration of Independence. You've got to read the Constitution, the Articles of Confederation. You've got to read the Constitution for the United States of America. It's not the Constitution of the United States of America. It's the Constitution for the United States of America. There are no inalienable rights. They are unalienable rights. And it is set out in the Declaration of Independence as unalienable rights, not inalienable. You know the difference? Inalienable means you are in a lienable position. Unalienable means you are not. You can't put a lien on a sovereign. Never understood that word, did you? Every word has a root. Every root means something. The root of unalienable and inalienable is lien. If you have inalienable rights, that means you have no sovereignty. You are in a lienable position. They can put a lien on you. You're a thing. Want to be a thing? You see, that's why words change over the years. They change words purposely to get you to commit under the law to be something that you are not. That's why you never hear the word republic anymore. What is it now? Democracy. Is it? No. And the day it is the end. How many of you are glad you came already? I am. Because I get to see Gene again. And I'm going to learn an awful lot from all of you and from the other speakers who are going to get up here, whom I've never heard. And who have their own research and their own knowledge to impart. Okay, now the reason I wanted to go into this is to make you understand what you don't know about yourself and your country so that you can begin to learn it. Okay? And the only way you can learn is go back to the beginning and start to read and understand. If you read something you don't understand, go back and get the documents and the books that were written by the people who wrote it. Not the books that are written about what happened and about it that are written today, but the books that were written then, because that's the only way you're going to understand it. Read what it was they were thinking, what they were trying to do, who participated, what the consequences were. Read some of the legal decisions based upon it. then you will begin to understand, and the wheels will begin to turn, and a light will come on in your head, and you will begin to know that you have worth, and you are valuable, and you are a sovereign. But only if you claim it. What's the first rule under the common law? Any right that is not claimed is gone. Any right that is challenged that is not defended is gone. What happens to you when you hire an attorney who appears on your behalf in court? That's right. You have declared yourself incompetent under the law. The attorney becomes your legal guardian, and he is an officer of the court. The court represents the state, not you. So when you hire an attorney, you have lost. Even if you won, you lost. And the attorney will only win if it's in his best interest and in the best interest of the state for you to win. Don't ever forget that. The only way you can truly win is to walk into the court as you and represent yourself, claim all your rights, and in doing so, you take a risk. Is freedom worth risk? If it's not, you're in the wrong meeting. If it's not, a lot of men died to give it to you. If it wasn't worth the risk, gee, I bet they wish they'd have known it. Okay, let's take a 5-minute break.
Yeah, the one you get from the National Archives doesn't look like anything, the one that you get from the government or in a history book. Or, yeah. And that's what we've really got to be careful of, is all this move to electronics. I mean, if you've got the paper book, you can tell what's in it, right? You get a book on CD-ROM, they can change whole segments of the book and you'd never know it, would you? Because it's electronic. It's like an electronic vote. You don't know who you voted for once you walk out of that thing. You don't know where that electron went, do you? No, that's the danger of electronic vote. You don't know what happened to your vote. You don't know who you really voted for, and now they're doing away with the paper ballots so that there's no way to tell. There's no process to check or have a recount. I mean, they're really taking us for a ride, and we really, really got to be careful. I mean, really super careful, because I've got to tell you the truth. Right now, we're just about 80% gone, and it's not going to take much more before it's all gone. It's just so easy when you have an ignorant, apathetic population. You see, they have a belief that as long as they keep a chicken in your pot and a roof over your head, you're not going to complain and you're not going to challenge what they do. And for most people, that's absolutely correct. But there comes a day that as a result of that ignorance and that apathy, the chicken leaves the pot and the roof falls in on your head. There is no putting off responsibility. It can't be done. Putting off responsibility in action is just ensuring the inevitable. And it's so much worse when it happens. I'd rather die swiftly right now than to die slowly over 20 years in chains.
You have been listening to a special edition of The Hour of the Time. This episode of The Hour of the Time was pre-recorded on August the 19th, 1996, in Norman, Oklahoma, at the annual Intelligence Service and CAGI News Service Conference. Please join us tomorrow night, ladies and gentlemen, for another edition of The Hour of the Time. Good night, and God bless each and every single one of you.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, worked for all my life, and I had to start again, with just my children and my wife, I thank my lucky stars to be living here today. 'Cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I'd gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this man. God bless the USA. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to LA, where the pride in every American heart.
This is the voice of freedom. You have been listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. At this time, we leave the air.